Forgotten the name tag. Morning, everybody. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic. Good to see everybody again. You know, on Sunday morning, these are the real troopers. These are the real sick guys that are still left by Sunday morning. Some of them already packed up. They've had enough of me and went on home and got back into the madness. But back into the madness. I was telling somebody today down in the inner city, where my home group is, in the hood, that's what they call it, the madness. You know, just came in from the madness. And probably a word that works perfectly. One of the things about these retreats, I don't know about you guys, you know, when you get here on Friday and you're kind of all wound up and let that stress level kind of ease down. And then it takes me about a day and a half. And then by Sunday morning, you know, I'm just in that spot, you know, and don't want to go back. We were sitting out this morning, looking at the lake, and the sun was coming right over the clouds, over the mountain. It kind of had this hue, and then it kind of was gleaming off that lake. And I was thinking, man, if I could just stay right here, you know, all would be well. And yet the problem is, and we're going to talk about that today, none of us can stay here. We got to go back to wherever we came from, back to the madness, and back and living in a world where at least I have a hard time negotiating sometimes. And that's the real deal while we're here. And we were talking, Terry and I, earlier about growing up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, what I realized, I'm 61 years old, and I got here when I was 42. And I've actually grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous because what I know today, I didn't know then, is I didn't really have any tools for living. Not really. And I didn't have any skills really to be anything. You know, I was out there doing the best I could with what I had. And I guess over the last, 19 and a half years, it's through, deals like this, listening to other men in Alcoholics Anonymous and how they did sobriety and how they did life, that I've learned who I was. And I hope, you always hope when you do something like this that somewhere in the course of this weekend, you've heard something, either something I've said or something somebody else has said that creates one of those aha moments, The wonderful thing I think about our program is you don't know when you're going to hear the message. And you don't know who it's going to come from. You know, and if you're like me, what I find amazing about our program is that, as long as I've been around, I never stop having those aha moments, right? And the good news is that, I guess what the whole deal is all about. I mean, I've read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, 164 pages, I don't know how many times. And yet, every time I go back through it, there's something else that pops out, because the way it works for me, and I think for all of us, is that the message is delivered when we are at a certain point in our life, when the pain level or the frustration level gets to a certain point where we can finally see and we can finally hear. And that never has stopped for me. But that's really exciting when you think about it, because it says that, this deal can go on and on and on. The guy around our area used to say that, as he went on in sobriety, the road narrowed. I mean, it got simpler, but the horizons continued to broaden and broaden and broaden. And that's really kind of what I continue to experience. And so, if you're new, and if you're sitting here and you didn't have an aha moment this weekend, keep coming back, because, you don't know when that's going to happen. And you keep in the process, and the enlightenment, or whatever the word you want to use, continues to come. I just love, so many times, we talk about what the basic things are there, but it's kind of some of the side shows and the side things that I always remember about events like this. A couple things we were talking about this morning, were my guys, Martin and Bobby. They were talking about Martin and Bobby yesterday canoeing. This is an alcoholic canoeing outing, all right? They both got in the canoe facing each other. And they said, go, and they started going in a circle. I thought, man, that's not the story of my life. And then somebody turned around and they finally started going in the right direction. Unbelievable. Then I was talking, this is great. This is a great alcoholic thing too. I was running into Ron this morning. He was coming up and I said, how you doing? How'd you sleep? He goes, well, you know what? I actually slept really good last night. He said, you know, we had one guy in our cabin who left because he complained about the snoring. And he said, I don't think anybody snored last night. The guy said, yeah, the problems of our own making. Poor guy left because he was snoring himself. Man, I tell you, it doesn't get any better than this. It really, really doesn't. I just like to kind of bring ourselves up to snuff here. We're going to talk today about 10 and 11 and 12, the maintenance steps. And, what we've been talking about, and as I told you, the way I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous is the first 9 steps are the recovery program of AA, and that once you've completed those, you have been through the recovery program and you're recovered and capable. But, you know, the other thing that it's very obvious if you paid attention about the steps yesterday is there's this connectivity about the steps, is that they're called the steps because one is actually obviously built on the other. And at the end of every step, if you read in the big book, there's some little disclaimer that says almost, it doesn't say this, but this is what it implies, is that congratulations, you've completed this step, but the step's pretty much worthless if you don't go on to the next one. There's a connectivity that's necessary. And, I've always been taught that there's 12 steps for a reason. You know, if we could have got by with 3 or 3.5, they would have done that. And the bottom line is that, you know, I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, my life's unmanageable. Okay. Now you've drawn that conclusion and you're going to have what? Some type of power now to deal with that unmanageability and your powerlessness that you discovered in step one. And in step three, now that we've, you know, found or been willing to find a power, now we got to be willing to turn our will and our life over to something bigger, better, and bolder than ourselves. And they said, now that you've done that, guess what? You've got this mess down inside of you, and if you don't clean it up, you know, if you don't become willing to take a look at it, it's going to sit down in there. It's going to continue to fester, and you're not going to get any better. And you're going to have to, once you find it, you're going to have to share it with another human being, and you're going to have to get it out in the open. And then once you do that, guess what? You're going to see these incredible character defects, which have just been kicking your butt your whole life. And until you become willing to take a look at those and have this power that you found help you with those, you know, you're pretty much going to suffer. You know, and isn't that what our stories are all about? You know, I know mine's all about, you know, the last 19 and a half years is getting in touch with those character defects. And then last night we talked about, you know, once we've uncovered these maladies and the harms that these maladies have caused, now we got to clean up the mess. And we've got to become willing to, you know, to make amends and go back to people. You know, and so what I just outlined there, and I said this to you last night, is I thought I was pretty hip, slick, and cool, you know, to the extent that, you know, I was out there doing life the way I thought any man should do life. And as I told you last night, when a guy said to me one time, you know, caught me totally off guard, he said, Tim, I want to tell you one thing that you need to understand. You have no skills. I said, what do you mean? You know, I wanted to bust him in his mouth. He said, no, very few of us have any living skills when we show up here. We show up with survival skills. If you're really a drunk, then you've been using your survival skills probably as long as you've been an adult. And if you started drinking when you're 13 years old, then that's all you know. And he was absolutely right. And, you know, and he said there's two primary, you know, survival skills, and you can classify them as fight or flee. You know, and boy, oh boy, as soon as he said that, as I said, my life flashed in front of me. Because really, my whole life, as I looked at it, you know, from the get-go, was some combination of fight and flee in every aspect of my life. You know, it kind of came off in different ways at different times, but when you broke it down, that's what it was about. And he said, here's what the steps are about. The steps are going to be about a third way for you to approach life, okay, where you don't have to run, you don't have to fight. You can stay in between that. And if you use this process, this design for living, that we're going to give you with the steps, then in every aspect of your life, in your personal life, in your business life, in your AA life, you don't have to run anymore, Tim. You don't have to fight anymore, Tim. You can employ this process. And what's the process? We just talked about it, you know. Chamberlain said, uncover, discover, discard. You know, we're going to start today with the maintenance step, with step 10, which says each day we will face anger, fear, dishonesty, and resentment. It doesn't say maybe either. It says each day you can count on facing anger, fear, dishonesty, and resentment. Now, but what it says is you've learned through these first 9 steps, instead of running, instead of fighting, here's what we suggest. When these things pop up, you immediately try to connect with this power greater than yourself that you've established in step 2. You know, you ask God's help or that power's help. Then you immediately become willing to share that feeling or that problem with another human being, another alcoholic, as we did and found out in step 4. So there's the second part. You immediately look at your side of it, and if you've got a part in it, you clean it up right now. You know, what we found that in what, steps 8 and 9. And then it says you resolutely turn your attentions to helping another alcoholic or another human being. And we find that where at the very end in step 12. And you see, that's what I'm saying is without that design for living, I'm left with fight or flee, you know. And in my best moments, you know, over the last 19 and a half years, I somehow pause when agitated long enough to employ the process. But I still, you know, many, many times, you know, go, as I said yesterday, left without that design for living, I go back to my default position, which is run or fight. And you know, if I looked at my total life over the last 19 and a half years, you know, unfortunately, I was unprepared many days. You know, and this is what we're going to talk about today. I hadn't maintained my maintenance to the extent that, you know, I left myself vulnerable. And what happened was the needle went back to the default position and Tim was in the fight or the run position, you know. And I was telling you yesterday about the, you know, the attack on the gate at the airport, you know, not the type of stuff that you're supposed to be doing when you're 12 years sober, right? But again, unprepared, unprotected, you know, without my tools in place, that's where I go, you know. And, you know, I say that because, you know, this is where we are now. And so that all sounds great, except, you know, the problem is it tells me very clearly in the 10-step what is that I only have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. You know, I don't even like the way that sounds right now, you know. At 19 and a half years, you'd like to think, come on, I should have some bonus points accumulated or something here, you know. I mean, I should get like a free ride or a free ticket after a while, right? I mean, I only get every day, only one day at a time. It's like a new deal every day. And so, yeah, that's right. And it doesn't matter if you've been around here 40 years one day at a time or you've been around here 3 weeks, wherever a guy is, one day at a time. We all have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of the spiritual condition. Now, again, like I told you, that when I first heard that when I showed up here, that concerned me because what I heard it say was I have a daily reprieve on the basis of being spiritual every day, you know. And that's not what it said at all, thank God. Because if that was true, if I only had a reprieve based on Tim being spiritual every day, you'd have a different speaker here tonight, or this morning, because that simply hadn't been my case, you know. Some days I don't look spiritual, I don't talk spiritual, you know, and it's the best I can do. And as I told you, I was all confused about that because I thought that this had to be a journey where I was, had to transform myself from this, you know, very imperfect person to some type of spiritual guru who just kind of looked and talked and acted almost all the time in a very spiritual, loving, and kind way. And that's not it. I mean, we might end up, or there might be a few people, and I've met them, who I think are that type of person. And as I've told you this weekend, you're not looking at one, all right? I mean, I have struggled in many aspects of my life, and my personal and my business life, with that incredible Hawk guy, you know, showing up. And he didn't go anywhere. He is still there. He's always been there. And without the maintenance of this spiritual condition, you know, it's, that's where I go back to. You know, so what is, you know, what is the maintenance? You know, the, you know, because the deal is, if I'm dependent on my spiritual condition, then that becomes meaning I'm dependent on how I am. Follow what I'm saying? And sometimes I am not in a very good spot. But the maintenance doesn't say that. It depends on what I do. And that's a whole different deal. You know, and thank God, as I said to you somewhere along the line, one of the problems when you do these weekend things, you know, you don't know what you talked about after, after a day or two. But I think I told you is that, you know, I would be for certain that if, I could review the whole time I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, probably half the time I looked and sounded, you know, spiritual and was okay with everything. The other half the time, you know, I probably looked more like somebody that just came off the street. The common thing that ties everything together is that I obviously on most days acted in a way that you suggested that kept me clean and kept me sober and kept me alive. You know, I had a analogy one time about that whole thing of spiritual. Remember the old Starkist commercial and had Charlie the Tuna? I don't know if they had it up here in Canada, but for a long time he'd have those commercials, and Charlie the Tuna, if you remember, was always trying to get everybody's attention, and he would dress up in sunglasses and try to look good, you know, and the bottom line was, is that they'd always come back and say, Charlie, you know, we don't want tunas with good taste. We want tunas that taste good. And I really related that to this. You know, we're really not interested in AA and people who look spiritual and sound spiritual. We just are looking for people who act according to the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And, you know, and I really need to, that gives me a lot of solace because, you know, early in my deal, I mean, when you were doing things like getting divorced, you know, I got in a fist fight with my 19-year-old son when I was 2 years sober and he knocked my tooth out. I'm thinking that, you know, Tim, this is not spiritual type of stuff, buddy. I mean, this is not the type of stuff that you want to let central office know about. You know, I mean, it's just not, you know, and it gave me a lot of hope when I came back to you guys and you said, well, you know, Tim, you're sober, aren't you? Yeah. And, you go to a meeting today? Yeah. All right. Here's the deal. You got amends to make? Yeah. And, but it's okay. You are human. You know, somebody was talking the other day about, there's a book out and it's called The Spirituality of Imperfection. And I don't know if any of you have ever read it, but it's an interesting book because it kind of, when I heard the name, I thought, wow, is that not Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, because as we said, the spirituality that's talked about here is about our woundedness. And it's about one person sharing their woundedness with another. It's not about everybody telling them how great mountaintops that they've scaled and how wonderful I have become. It's just the opposite. We show up and we tell people where we're wounded, how we got wounded, and how we got better, you know. And it really is a spirituality of imperfection. And thank God for that because, you know, I have just fallen down time and time again, as I know we all have. And as long as I'm willing to keep coming back here. And that has so much to do with these maintenance steps. You know, it's the same thing with the whole maintenance thing. I don't know about you guys, but I back in my drinking days, you know, I just didn't maintain anything. You know, I'd buy a car, you know, and drive it till it just died, you know. And then they finally, you know, I had to learn that, Tim, you're supposed to put oil in it. Yeah, I would put gas in it, and that would be about it, you know. But if it ran till it ran. And this whole idea of a maintenance of anything was kind of common to me. You know, in the thing that I want to go back to in my life today about this 10th step, you know, each day I face anger, fear, dishonesty, and resentment. You know, one of the things that, there's a question, I don't know that you guys maybe deal with this or not, but I have a question that almost, or a couple of questions that are consistently, persistently in my mind. And one of them is, what am I getting? What am I getting? And you see, I have never been able to get a successful answer to that question. Because when it pops into my mind, what am I getting out of this? The answer is always the same, not enough. And my sponsor said, Tim, your only hope is to quit asking that question. And the other question is, you know, how am I doing? How am I doing? You know, I don't know what that's all about. I remember early in my sobriety saying to people, I don't think I'm doing very well, Blair. I don't feel very good about this. And what was suggested to me, Tim, they said, you know, Tim, you are the last person to judge how you're doing. Leave that job to us, son. You know, in fact, we'll tell you how you're doing. You're doing a hell of a lot better than you were the first day we saw you. You know, and I really say that because I have no ability on any given day to judge how I'm doing. If there's anybody that's the worst judge of me, it's me. And, you know, and I say that because that's why sponsorship and that's why sharing with other alcoholics is so important to me. Because what you guys say, what you guys hear and able to reflect back to me are very important. You know, we were talking, some of us this week, about the peculiar mental twist that precedes the first drink. That really fascinates me. You know, I wondered what that was all about one time. And here's what I finally was able to figure out is that the peculiar mental twist is something that I can always hear and see in you, but I can never hear or see in me. And the reason I'm saying that is that's why it's absolutely important and necessary that I stay around you guys. And here's what I'm talking about. When I was about 4 or 5 years sober, if you're in that area, you know, AA had grayed out for me. You know, the thrill was kind of gone. And I was kind of getting dull. It was kind of getting boring. And if you were around me about that time, what you'd hear me saying were things like, well, you know, that sponsor I got, you know, he's a good guy, but I don't know. He's got some issues, and I might have to get me a new one. And that home group of mine, oh, man, they are doing the dumbest things. They are way off. And, you know, my God, the people they're letting into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the caliber is way down. You with me? Now, again, that's what you're hearing me say, right? Now, I don't get it. But what you're hearing and what's really going on is I'm starting to slowly back out the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the peculiar mental twist. And thank God, I mean this seriously, people around me, they heard it really clear. They saw exactly the setup. And the deal is you've been around people. Think about it, that you sponsor in your meetings, and that's exactly what you start hearing. And what you know is, whoa, that guy's setting himself up to take a hike out of here. He's setting himself up for that first drink. He's starting to detach, you know. And what is really incredible to me is how subtle it is. How subtle it is. You know, Rick, I'd like to make the meetings, but you see what happened is, and here's the good one. I got sober so I can be with my kids. And I got sober so I could be back in my church. That's why I got sober, right? So, I mean, time is time, and I really don't have any time to be at that meeting anymore. You understand? And, you know, you're listening to the guy almost thinking, yeah, that almost sounds like he's right. It almost sounds like he's right, right? But what's really starting to happen is that peculiar mental twist starting to set up. And my whole point is this, guys, is that if I don't stay around you guys, just like when I was 5 years sober, they knew what was going on. And so the people would say to me, said, well, Tim, you know, that sponsor of yours, he might be. Maybe he is getting goofy. I don't know. I mean, he's only 28 years sober. I mean, he might, you know, who knows? In that home group of yours, how many people were in it when you started? Well, there was probably only 30 of us. How many people in your home group today, Tim? Well, there's over 100. Says, well, sounds like something must be going on pretty good there, Tim. You know, and Tim, don't worry about the caliber of the people coming into AA. They let you in, didn't they? You know, and I'm really serious about it because I really believe this. You know, I really believe at that point in time, you know, I lost my marriage. Everything is graying out on me that I was kind of starting to slide out the door. You know, and that's the thing with us. Most of us don't make a big deal when we leave, right? We just kind of subtly disappear one day. And you say, hey, man, what happened to Chris? He was a good guy. We liked him. Where'd he go? Think about it. And in Louisville, I do it all the time. All of a sudden, I'll be sitting in a meeting and think, what happened to that one guy? He was here for years, and then you find out, you know, the guy's drunk and he's dead. You know, it's something that I have a lot of respect for, and it all comes back to this. Is that, you know, uncover, discover, my job is to ask God's help with my daily problem. But the biggest thing is I have to share with you guys. As I talked to you yesterday, a lot of us, for some reason, in this whole maintenance thing, like to take shortcuts. And what starts to happen is, why do I have to call Alex to talk to him about this? You know, I talked to God this morning. He and I got it worked out. Screw Alex. I'm not calling him, you know? There's something about the process that they gave us in step 10, right? To ask God's help and direction. But immediately, why don't you share that prayer that you just had with God with another human being? Clean up your mess and help other people. And you see, that's the deal. But my particular, over the years, and I'll tell you the perfect case, you know, when I was able to look, for example, at the marriage I had when I was 9 years sober, that, you know, and in the program Alcoholics Anonymous, which busted up so badly, I dated this lady for about 8 months, and then one day I decided, you know, and really this is kind of what was the thinking was, is, hey, I'm 12 months sober. For God's sakes, I should be able to choose my own woman, you know. So I didn't tell anybody. Went down and bought the ring, and you all heard what happened. I mean, the thing ended up in total chaos. Now, my sponsor, being a really good man that he is, didn't say a word until it all went up in flames. And I'm having this little, you know, crying session one day, and he goes, Tim, I just want to ask you one thing, son. He says, how come you didn't talk to me about this before you bought the ring? You know, and I knew immediately, because I didn't want to take the risk that he might filter that out on me. I decided I wanted to do it, and I was going to do it, and I stepped around the process. You know, and as I think about it over the last 19 and a half years, you know, if I'm not willing, for example, to share a decision in my life with my sponsor, then I need to take a look at what that's all about. All right? Because what it usually is all about with me, it's another manifestation of self. It's another very subtle decision on my part is I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to risk anybody telling me they don't want to do it. You know, it's like guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I don't know about around here, but, you know, we have guys at home will get 3 or 4 sponsors. You go, what's that all about? And I said, I understand exactly what it's about. You know, I'll spread the information around, and then nobody knows the deal. You know, that was my whole deal in life. You know, when I was growing up, you know, I would share so much of my life with you. I'd share so much of my life with you. I'd tell my wife just about this, but you wouldn't get it all. And you wouldn't get it all. Nobody got the whole show. Because, see, that's my safety. That was my out. Because when I was challenged and they'd say, and this started to happen, Tim, you're an alcoholic. And I'd say, well, based on what you know, I see how you would say that. But, see, you don't know everything. I always held a piece back. And, see, that's the deal. But it's the piece. I might give you 99%. But it's that one piece that I held back that's going to get me. That's the absolute thing. It's the same thing there. Just like in this case, I shared everything with this man. So why didn't I want to share with him that I wanted to get engaged to this woman? All right. That's the piece of self that I had to take back. And, you know, I have never, you know, as I look over it, you know, done that where there hasn't been consequences. And yet, you know, I fight with it all the time. And we were talking about this the other day, too. This program works so well. And through my 19 and a half years, I will get into a certain maintenance, right? I go to these meetings every day. I say my prayers every day. And it's just humming along. It's working. It's working. It's working. It's working. It's working. And then one day I wake up and go, I ain't doing it. I ain't doing it today. I ain't going to that meeting. I ain't saying these prayers. What is that all about? It's working. And there's some part of me that jumps in and says, I ain't doing it today. You know, and if I look over my 19 and a half years, you know, there's a set of meetings that I go to. And it just, my life, it gets a nice harmonious thing. And then one day, for some reason, I'm not going to that meeting today. And I will get in dishevel, and I'll have to get back into my routine. And I guess what I'm saying is, left to my own devices, this thing, this disorder of the ego that I have, that we talked about the very first day that I was talking, left of my own devices, it goes to that spot every time. You see, I say that because back to this daily maintenance. And see, you know, the thing with me is that we were talking about this the other day about the actions, is that in my sponsor emphasizes to me so much, Tim, is that, you know, you just have got to get away from depending on your feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. And just irregardless of how you feel, think, or believe, just do these inane, dumb old actions every day, would you? For example, we'll talk about this in the 11th step, is my prayer life, you know? Is that every day, irregardless of how I feel, to drop out of that bed, get on my knees and say, you know, God, thanks for waking me up sober. Thanks for waking me up alive. Now, the deal is some days that's real easy. Some days I don't mind doing it. Some days it's just perfect. But there's some days like it's, you know, it's real cold or I wake up late and I got a good reason. I should be at work, you know, and I got to get going. And that's the very essence of when I have to do it, you know. I can't only do it when I feel like doing it, when I think it should be done, you know. I've got to get in these disciplines. And that was the thing that, you know, it says very clearly in our book that as alcoholics, we are undisciplined. And that was so true. And I'll be honest with you today, I don't like anything about discipline. You know, the one thing that you never do to an alcoholic is point at them, right? You point at them, say, this is what you do, then I'm not listening and I'm not going to do it. You know, I don't like discipline. I didn't like discipline in my life. You know, the other thing too is about, you know, spiritual aloofness, you know, is, I think as we get sober, I did, you know, it's very easy. It has been for me to move to that higher plane. All right. I've been around for a while and I did all these basic mechanics when I came in. It seemed to work for me, but now life is going on and life's going better for me. I don't know. You know, it's like I wake up in the morning and God and I just join hand in hand and we're just going to kind of go out and do the world today. But unfortunately, I really don't have time to take this call from this sponsee anymore, you see, because I got a higher plane that I'm working on. And I really don't have time to get there at the meeting to make coffee anymore because I got this higher plane that I'm operating from. You know, and I'm just kind of talking about this because at least with me, you know, these are all the things that as I look at over the 19 and a half years, you know, kind of gotten into my way. You know, it's kind of like moving into spiritual graduate school. You know, we can't hardly, you know, do it, you know, after we're around for a while and we start looking down on these poor old stupid newcomers who just, you know, my God, they're so pitiful and need so much help and direction. And I have just moved on so far beyond all that, you see, that I sometimes I can't hardly get down low enough to connect with those guys. You know, and I say that because unfortunately, you know, that's the type of ego that I have and that's the type of where it will take me, you know, left unattended. You know, and I've said this for many, many years. I think God knew with me, you know, I told you my home group is down in the inner city and you know, it's newcomers all the time. I mean, I'm 19 and a half years sober and I'm one of the old timers there, that's for sure. You know, I said one time, you know, our average sobriety down there is about a red chip, you know. It's just a lot of new people. But it works for me because it keeps me constantly grounded into what this is really all about. You know, it's really all about life and death. I'm the type of guy that I almost need to be reminded of that on a daily basis. And so working with drunks in detox and working with drunks in homeless shelters, you know, constantly reminds me, this is not, you know, if I'm getting to that spiritual graduate school mentality, you know, quickly brings me back, you know, to what this thing's truly all about. And, you know, the thing about the 10th step is that, you know, although it says in this 10th step is that, that we will grow in insight and effectiveness about this whole process. And I certainly have. And the only way that's come to me is over time and hard experience. But although we grow in insight and effectiveness, it clearly says it's not about developing higher level principles. It's only about the same principles, the basic principles that we've learned in steps 1 through 9. It always was and it always will be. There's nothing about higher level principles. You know, this whole business in step 10 about when I was wrong, promptly admitting it. You know, and I don't know about you guys, but I just hang on to that sometime, you know. I just want to hang on to it for a while and be miserable with it for a while before I'm ready to admit that I was wrong. You know, and we were talking about in marriages, you know, the differences for me today. You know, I think I'm much better at that, you know, of admitting to my wife, you know, when I was wrong. Because there was a time where that just wasn't possible. You know, I just would hang on to that and be miserable with that for a long time. And, you know, I love the way this thing works too. I love what guys pick up about your talking. I was talking yesterday about my wife and how I consented to going shopping with her, and she ended up buying me a latte, and we ended up, you know, she suggesting that we, you know, make love. And so I had a guy this morning say, "Hey, you know, I really heard what you said. I'm going to get home. I'm going to take my wife shopping." You probably won't be the only one either. Now, there's no guarantee that that'll work, you guys. You got to go without expectation for fun and for free, right? So don't be calling me and saying it didn't work for me. But this whole idea of promptly admitting when we're wrong, and, you know, I don't know what that's all about. I guess it's about ego again, too, you know, but in my work and in my home, you know, some days I just, you know, in a business situation especially, I don't know about you guys, and maybe it's a man thing, but I have the toughest time with it there. You know, I've got a couple guys that I do business with that I just don't like, you know. I just don't like, there's nothing about them that I like, but, you know, we're stuck doing business together. And I have to work my rear end off, you know, just to try to love, comfort, and understand. And if there comes a case where I have been wrong, and there has been in the past, where I hate all these guys at amends. I mean, I have gone weeks and months, you know, and staying very uncomfortable about it till, you know, I've gotten it done. And, in fact, one of the guys I was with in Phoenix before I came up here, and, I really tore into this guy one time about 4 or 5 years ago, and I kind of made amends to him, but, you know, I finally was able to get to him, you know, I was down there and say, "Look, man, I was wrong, you know, in how I approached things," and cleaned it up. So, you know, that whole business of promptly, you know, every day taking a look at, you know, where were we dishonest, where were we, you know, anger, resentment, and immediately doing on that, you know, and it's the whole thing about how and when and how quick do you want to be comfortable, you know? And, that's the beautiful part about our process. You know, I can get comfortable as quickly as I'm willing to do it. You know, the deal is that I have this pride or this ego that kind of puts that on hold all the time. You know, and then we have the 10-step promises. You know, we talked about the other day. I didn't get into that a lot, but you know, I didn't realize there are lots of promises in our book, you know, other than just the ones that we call the promises, you know, at the end of the 9th step. And the 10-step promises basically tell us, you know, if we execute that process, serenity returns, and we get reconnected with this higher power that we found back in 2, you know. So it's the first thing. It's all about connectivity, and it's all about, you know, using this process. The, you know, there's a guy around, they used to call him the Fish Man, Dave Inman, and, they call him the Fish Man because he sold fish. That's what he did. And, he was an old guy around our area, and he used to always call this 10th, 11th, and 12th steps a checkup from the neck up. And, we have a big book meeting on Wednesday night with a bunch of guys, and, we'll read the big book, but then every once in a while I'll catch them off guard and I say, "All right, we're going to have a checkup from the neck up." And they'll check in on their 10th step for that day. And we kind of practice that process, you know, of going through the whole inventory of the 10th step. The 11th step, you know, we were talking about this at breakfast this morning, you know, continue to seek this conscious contact, you know, with this power that we've found. And, you know, I guess a lot of us came up with, the idea of what prayer was all about in prayer life. And I did, you know, I told you I was a Catholic, and, you know, we had the old rote prayer things, you know, which I never understood what that whole deal is about. You know, you rattled off 10 Hail Marys and 10 Our Fathers as quick as you could. And, you know, you put a mark up on the board and, you know, insanity, I guess. But I guess it was a matter of discipline or whatever they called it at the time. But this whole idea of getting connected, you know, here's what I would tell you, you know, back to the madness. I'm a type of guy that, you know, left again unattended. If I wake up in the morning, radio goes off, the radio comes on, TV comes on, you know, and I jump into the pace of normal life without preparation, you know, I do not do well. Because what happens with me, it's like a motor. If I jump in and that motor gets running and the stimulus starts making me run faster, you know, I will guarantee you that that's designed, you know, for trouble, you know. It took me a long time to get in touch with this, is that, you know, I do not have the type of constitution to go out and participate in this chaotic world that we live in. And what I mean is this, you know, it's just like, again, does a tree you make a sound if it falls in the forest? And I'm sitting here today saying, hey, I'm connected with God, and is of my understanding. How can I not be? Look at the trees. Look at the water. Look at the sun. You know, if I could just stay here, I'm good. The problem is I got to get on a goofy airplane at 6 o'clock tonight. You know, you talk about stressful. The whole thing will start about, you know, I'm going to fight my way back across the country to Chicago, from Chicago down to Louisville, and go everything that goes with that. At best, I'll probably get a little bag of peanuts, you know. The person in front of me, you know, will probably be overweight and put their chair back on and right in my face, which happened on the way here. And now I'm back in the world as we know it, all right. And now I'm not with my buddies back at the lake and where everything is serene and fine. Tim has got to find a way now to participate in this madness called the real world. And what I'm saying is this takes me a lot of work and a lot of preparation. You know, cause left, if I go out without any, you know, preparation, you know, I'm pretty much doomed for really some quick failure. And so, you know, our book says upon awakening. Upon awakening, you know, it doesn't even say after you pee. It says upon awakening, get at it immediately, you know, and I'm really, it's really true about me. I mean, this preparation business is serious. And, you know, and I don't know that I know all that much about meditation. I don't, but I do know about preparation. And, you know, my particular preparation is very simple. As I told you, I get out, I do my, ask God, thank God, and ask God for help that day. I get up, I make my bed, and then I have a little chair in my little spot of my bedroom. That's my little spot where I go. And I make sure I sit there in preparation for the day, at least, you know, 10 or 15 minutes at the most. I read my daily meditation. I read the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. And then I just try to sit quietly for 5 minutes to at least get myself a chance, you know, to be prepared to step out into this world. You know, and I'd like to tell you that that just gets it done for the rest of the day. And sometimes it might get it done until 8 o'clock in the morning, you know. And as I said, you know, thank God we have a program and the steps are designed that we can start over, you know, with that whole preparation every time. And the other thing for me is that I have got to find that same quiet space somewhere during the course of the day. Because what happens with me, and it's real subtle again, is I get caught up, you know, in the momentum. And I don't want to go fast, but you're going fast and the world's going fast. And the next thing I know, I'm moving. And when I get going like that, then I'm in the danger zone. So I'll, you know, usually at lunchtime or about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll try to find some quiet time to shut the door in my office, maybe do just a little bit of reading and kind of get recentered, you know? And I say that to you because it took me a long time to accept that I had to do that. It was almost a prideful thing. Why should a guy like me have to pause 3 or 4 times a day just to stay regulated well enough to participate fairly? I don't know why it has to be, but for me, it has to be that way because I have that inside. Again, without some type of maintenance and preparation, I go back to default position, which is restless, irritable, and discontent, and watch out. You know, one of the places, you guys are all men in the workplace. I have about 25 people that work for me. You know, and not too long ago, we had a consultant come in from the outside, and I'm thinking I'm getting really a lot better, you know, and I have gotten better. But the consultant does, you know, interviews with everybody. It's called a SWOT. You look at your strengths, your weaknesses, and so we have the wrap up at the end, you know, with the owners, and So the consultants say, you know, they talk about my son, they talk about my brother. And of course, I'm thinking I'm going to get a glowing report. I mean, I've been doing really good. And they said, Tim, you know, the thing about you is that, you know, the people respect you and they love you, but you know, they would really like if you would kind of spend more time paying attention to them. And I go, oh, you know, hey, gone it. I mean, what do you mean? You know, what do you mean? You know, and the first thing is that I'm the boss. I don't have to pay attention to them. I pay them. And he says, no, they respect you, but they'd like you to acknowledge them. It goes back to the same thing. I have a manner about me that distances me from people when I'm in what I assume is a competitive, threatening environment. And these are my people. And here's what I'm saying. So I made up a thing now. I have to actively. I have a rotation. I walk into this office and say, hi, Margaret. How are you? Good, good. And I go to the next office. And I'm going like, this is stupid. Why do I have to do this? Right? But here's what I'm saying. Without that concerted action, unfortunately, left to my own devices, I come across as this. Okay, and this is not new. Here I am now, almost 20 years sober, and the man's telling me the same thing. And this was 3 weeks ago. You see, so what I'm saying is, it's all about maintenance for me. It's all about choosing to do that. And I went home and told my wife, I said, you know, of course, my first thought was, I'm getting another consultant, you know. But I went home and told my wife, I said, God darn it, you know, I don't get this. You know, here I am a spiritual giant, almost an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, they're still telling me that I'm coming across as adverse to my employees. She said, and she didn't say anything. I think she wanted to say, yeah, I can see where they're coming from. Yeah. But my point is, guys, is that this maintenance thing is something, whether I like it or not, once I accept it, because what they're basically saying is those are the character defects that I can't seem to do anything about. I'm asking God, please help me with them. I don't want to be that way. I don't want to distance myself from my own employees. You know, they're my friends. They're the people that are, you know, working in my company. But I do it. There's a part of me for some reason that does that. Just like Margaret, you know, I told you that story yesterday when she quit. You know, that was my first year of sobriety. She said, Tim, you look like you're going to kill people here. You know, I don't want to be that way, but there's a part of me that I just can't seem to do anything about without divine intervention. But in the meantime, like you say, I have to really work hard at this whole thing of daily maintenance. On the cards that I gave you guys, I want to talk about the keynotes too, because that really became important to me. Somebody asked the other day, yesterday, we passed those cards out. I have one extra because there's some people that didn't get them. I'd be glad to give that to you. I thought there were more. Was you? Okay, I got it after the meeting. But my sponsor actually gave me these because, you know, one of the things that I really believe that I can't do much about those core defects, I guess, that keep coming up except ask God's help. But what I can do in the preparation is focus, as Chuck Chamberlain said, my entire attention, care, and love towards something. And when I do that, you know, it really does work. And my sponsor gave me these keynotes, and I have all of them on a little piece of paper. Honesty, humility, gratitude, love, comfort, understand. Thy will be done, Lord, not mine. I am no longer in charge. And the last one, help God's kids today for fun and for free. And every morning when I finish my meditation, I pull one of those keynotes. And whatever it happens to be for that day, love, comfort, and understand, then I ask God that day to help me go out in my work, in my home, and focus on that keynote today of bringing love, comfort, and understanding to every aspect of my life. And God, help me focus my entire attention, care, and love on every person in my work today, on my wife, on every kid person that comes in contact with me. And, you know, I need to tell you, it really does work. You know, it really does work. And it has, I'm a type of guy that has to have something like that. I have to have a designed focus. And the next day it might be, you know, gratitude. And I really try to go out of my way that day to make sure I express and bring gratitude to every area and every person that I come in contact with. Now, you see, the thing that I would say about that is, you know, for a long time, I didn't think a guy like me, a guy of my stature, should have to do inane stuff like that to operate successfully in this world. But the bottom line is, guys, that is the bottom line for me. If I choose to do those inane maintenance steps, my days go pretty well. But I need to tell you, it's just like everything with our disease. There comes a day that I'm just like, screw it. I am not pulling out one of those things today. I'm going to wing it. You know? I'm going to wing it. Now, why I need to wing it, I don't know. But you see, I think that's the whole idea about, is I've been here and I get beaten up time and time again. I just go back to these basic things over and over and over. You know, the other thing we were talking about, meditation. I've been in the Texas Man-to-Man Conference. They were talking about this today. Every morning, they have a meditation before the meeting. It's kind of like this, and it's outdoors, and they have two guys that get up here and read, and invariably, we have the meditation going on, and everybody's supposed to focus and be quiet, and it'll go about 2 minutes, and you hear the phone bell. You hit three or four guys are snoring, you know. They fall asleep immediately. And somebody was saying at breakfast, you know, that's what happens to me every time I try to meditate, you know, I fall asleep. And I got so frustrated with that. We were talking about this. The harder I tried to meditate, you know, the worse it got. I couldn't do it. And, someone was sharing, I think it was Bill this morning, that, you know, meditation is some form of getting out of self, all right, out of self and into some type of neutral zone. And he was talking about, he found it when he was running or walking or working sanding at home. And I understood absolutely what he said. You know, just something that takes me into this neutral position where I can get quiet enough and my mind gets clear enough where God has time to connect with me. You know, Martin was talking about the biblical saying, you know, be still and know that I am God. You know, and that's so, so true with me. My problem, and I think all of our problems in the world that we live in, which is such a high-tech, high-noise, I call it the noise of the world, is that I don't give the God that time to find me very much in that quiet space. You know, and I have a hard time many times as we talk about it is getting in the now. And I said one time, I can't find God. And they said, Tim, that's why, because you're not in the now, and that's where he's at. God is always in the now. He's not somewhere off. He's not somewhere back. He's here right now. You know, and I have to really work at that process. But what I'm saying to you is that I think meditation doesn't have to be, you know, what we think it is traditionally. It can be whatever it is for you in terms of trying quiet time. My wife and I, again, one of the things in our reconstructive relationship that we do is we walk almost every night, you know. And a lot of times we walk and we converse, but a lot of times we just walk quietly in silence. And for me, at least, it's a time to create that void, to create that silence where I can connect with this power greater than myself. So, you know, I don't have any, particular thing that I can say about that. I just say to everybody is that, you know, I don't know if you're an alcoholic the way I'm an alcoholic, then finding that quiet space somewhere in your day, you know, becomes real, real important. At least it is to me. You know, the biggest thing that I want to talk about is that today, finally in my life, there is no division in my life. There's no division between my personal life, my business life, in my AA life. And this is really interesting to me because I remember early in my sobriety, and some of you might be there, that I was totally confounded by the thing is, my God, you know, there's just not enough time for everything. My personal life, my business life, and they all seem in conflict with one another, for God's sakes. What's a guy to do? There's not enough time for this. And I remember going to my sponsor at that time and I'm saying, you know, I need to get balance in my life. Balance. And he said, Tim, here's the first thing you need to understand. If you could balance your life, then that means that you could manage your life. You can no more bring balance to your life than you can bring the management to your life. You know, our program is very clear. It says, The only thing you're directed to do is, you know, carry the message on a daily basis to another alcoholic and practice these principles in all your affairs. And trust this, that God then will work out the balance in your life. You know, and I say that because today, 19 and a half years sober, by far, the mystery to me is I spend more time in AA than I ever have. My personal life is good or better than it's ever been, and the same thing with my work life. And I look around some days going, man, how does that work? Because there was a time in my sobriety where that looked like an impossible task. But isn't it what the promises say, is that we intuitively will know, you know, those things that baffled us. One day you're going to look around, and it's all just kind of meshed together. I have to guys show you this guy, this. What did I do with it? My friend Don, who's an MBA. What did I do with it? There it is. We were talking about this yesterday, and he did these concentric circles. And this was something, if you ever read Chuck Chamberlain, you know, Chamberlain had a similar thing in his deal in his book. AA, personal and business life, three separate, you know, circles. And what he said, and this is where my life became, is those three circles have to become concentric, they become overlapping. And right in the middle of that is where the deal is. Right in the middle of that is where, you know, God and has brought my life to be in harmony, to be in perfect synergy. You know, and I told you, I love that part of my life. I have a particular a blessing with that because I told you my office is not far from my home group. And it's not unusual for the guys I sponsor to be in my office. We have a big book group there on Wednesday night. You know, all the ladies in my office, I mean, they don't know them by name, but they know it. That's a drunk when they come in. And, my home group is, you know, is real close to that. So, I mean, it's just all kind of worked together for me. And, as a result of that, you know, I tell you, so there's been some, over the years, just some really, really funny and neat stories about that. I told you I'm in the insurance business, right? And we do home and auto insurance. So when I got in AA, naturally started going to meetings and I had a bunch of guys coming up saying, hey man, I need auto insurance, and not the best risk as you might want to guess. And, but I'd give him a card and say, you know, here's the lady that does that. Give her a call and she'll give you an auto quote. And I didn't think anything about it, right? And time's going on. So one day I'm in my office and this lady who quotes the auto business came in. She said, her name was Susan. She said, Tim, can I talk with you? I said, yeah, come on in. So she sits down and she goes, where are you getting those guys that you're sending here for auto quotes? She says, I've never seen such horrible driving records in my life. And she said, and they all have the same address. There was a homeless shelter that was down the street. I said, Susan, sit down. And then, you know, she didn't know the deal, so I told her the whole deal about Alcoholics Anonymous and whatnot. And then there was another story one time. There's a restaurant down the end of the block from my office, and one day I had these two bankers that came to take me to lunch. And so here we are in our suits walking down this side of the street, and I saw out of the side of my eye across the street, these two little people are in my home group. They were little street people, little bag lady, Jean and Alan. She was pushing her grocery cart, and I see them over there. I'm going, oh no. And sure enough, we get about to the end of the corner, and Jean stops her grocery cart and goes, hey Tim, are you going to the A&A meeting today? And these two guys I'm with, they're startled, and one guy says, what did she say? And the other guy said, I think she told Tim to have a good day today. Oh, man. But you know, I particularly, that makes my life so, you know, so neat. There's no mystery about it. There's no secrecy about it, you know, and I like that. And I say that because I don't know. Everybody has their own take on what anonymity is all about. And I know we have guys in Louisville that, you know, they have it so separated that, you know, people at their work and people that they, you know, in their neighborhoods, nobody knows, have any idea that they're in this secret society called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I understand, you know, the necessity of anonymity. But I also understand that what it says in the book is that we need to stay on the firing line of life. And as a direct result of that, let me tell you, in my office over the last time I've been sober, I've had four different women there who either had alcoholic husbands, brothers, or sons, who all came to me because they knew of my situation, and I was able to direct them to Al-Anon and able to direct them to their relatives getting help. I've had two people who worked for me that, were into substance abuse, and the deal is that, if my recovery wasn't evident, then those people would have not been able to, have that outlet that they do. So at least what I'm saying is that, I think, it's very important that we carry our recovery, at least in a way that, it is an attraction situation that people come to know that. And I never told anybody specifically, announced it, that I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. As I say, my situation just became very obvious. When you have wet drunk showing up at the front door of your office, I mean, that's happened two or three times, where I'll be in a meeting in the conference room and here's one of these guys out there staggering out in the hall. And so it becomes pretty obvious that, my life is involved with something to do with this thing called alcoholism. Which brings us to step 12. And, the thing about step 12, and you were talking about Tom Ivester the other day, is that, we'll go on here and, let's see, what time do we start? 8:30? Why don't we do this? Why don't we take just a, break until quarter till, and then we'll finish up with step 12 and a few things and get you guys on your way. All right?